This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Jeremy?
Oh yeah, Lou, I can feel it.
And tonight, this is a special episode. We have Jeremy from the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Welcome aboard for the evening.
Yeah, great to be here, Lou. Appreciate the invite.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I figure I've been on your show a couple times. You've been gracious enough to invite me. So, what the hey, bring you on here.
Excellent.
So how long have you guys been doing Seeds of Liberty, and who else is involved in this project of sedition and subversion?
Well, it's myself and a couple of my friends, Danilo Cuellar and Dave Painter. We started, I think, somewhere around March, and it was just something. Dave actually brought it to me. I had never actually thought of doing any kind of podcasting, radio, anything like that. I had, you know, aspirations of it, I guess, when I was younger, but he brought it to me because I used to do some work for another website, and when things went sour with them, he thought I would be looking for another project. So he asked, and I said, sure, why not? And just started doing a weekly show. And it's been pretty interesting. As you mentioned, you were gracious enough to come on a couple times for us. And, you know, we've managed to land some other interesting guests. And we just try to have fun with it.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, you've had a pretty impressive list. You've had Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, who
yes.
is a retired fiend. He's taking off his jersey, is hanging in the locker room, getting ready to be hung from the arena ceiling. recently, you had Lawrence Reed on there, and that's a pretty big name.
Yeah, Lawrence.
And I haven't
caught
that interview yet.
Oh, yeah. It was. Oh, sorry. It was one of our shorter ones, but it was really good. Lawrence was a really, really nice guy. We are kind of lucky in that regard because Danilo has been doing his own interview show called Peaceful Anarchism for about a year and a half or so now, and he made some connections early on with some people in the, you know, so-called liberty community, and he usually now asks anytime he has a guest if they'd also be willing to do our show at some point, so we kind of, you know, steal from his pile, and it definitely helps us out. Like Lawrence, who I had read, you know, I've known about him. I've read his articles and stuff like that. But he was just a super gracious guy, and only because he kept reminding us that he was an older man and he couldn't hang with us for too long. Otherwise, he would have kept talking. But somebody like that he seems willing to talk to just about anybody if they're willing to listen to him, which is great, especially for somebody like us who's just starting out.
Well, not everybody can go on a show for 2.5-3 hours.
No, Lou, that's only you. You still hold the record.
Okay, twice, I think. But but yeah, you've had Prof. CJ, who was recently on The Fiends. And
yes.
Who else have you had?
Let's see. Well, Ben was our first, I guess, big one. We also had... There's people from... in and out the community. I don't know how many people know about them. I'm trying to think. Now I'm drawing a blank. You caught me off guard with that. Because when I think of it, I think of Ben, because we actually just replayed his episode, the first repeat we ever did. We took off for Turkey Day. But Prof, CJ, and Ben, and you, and Lawrence, probably our biggest ones, but people like Michael Shanklin, who runs the Anam Pacienta, who's an activist who actually wrote one of my favorite children's books for anarchy called Three Friends Free. Our new buddy Jared Howe, who's a voluntarist anarchist rapper, has been on a couple of times with us recently. Our goal really, you know, it's nice to have the so-called bigger names, but Dave kind of spearheaded this project, and his goal was to get just people's voices out there. So we've even had like one of our fans who wasn't very liberty minded before she came across our podcast. She just happened to listen to one we did with a friend of ours on unschooling. And she contacted us and started asking a lot of questions. And within a couple of weeks, she was listening regularly, contributing to the Facebook group, book group that we started to go along with the show. And so we had her on, and now that's the new project. Is we want to try to get at least one fan on a month to let them talk about their experiences, you know.
And you're talking about Amanda, right?
Yes, Amanda.
I met her at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest this year, and she found out about it because of my appearance on your show. So, thanks for bringing people to.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, that's right. I forgot she had gone there. I was actually very jealous because I think we had talked about that. I wanted to go, but it's at a horrible time for me with my job, so there was no way I could make it out there. But yeah, we tried to tell anybody we knew that was anywhere in the area, go visit Lou.
Well, I appreciate that very much, and it was great to make those connections. And really, when it comes to podcasts, I really enjoy hearing people that they're not big names, it's somebody that I've never heard of before, because they generally have a fresher message and perspective on things, whereas if you interview most people, you know, particularly the big names, you're going to hear pretty much the same stuff just about every time. You know, the interviews don't change a whole lot from one show to the next.
Yeah, and I can imagine people would get tired of it. It's funny, actually, now that you mentioned that, now I remembered one other name we had on who said that to us. We had Carlos Morales on a couple of weeks ago, and he actually mentioned that he was thankful that we started asking him different questions other than the Child Protective Service thing that he usually always talks about. But that makes sense, because I think you and I have discussed that before, where, you know, you had Adam Kokesh, you interviewed him during the Peace and Liberty thing. The festival. I wanted to say conference. Yeah. I'm like, that's not right. We don't do conferences. But you had said that, you know, you asked them different questions, and that's why a lot of more people enjoyed it. And I think that's, you know, having the so-called littler names definitely helps. But even if you have somebody who's, you know, made a name for themselves, if you ask them different questions, that will make it interesting, because like you said, so many people ask certain individuals to come on their show and they want to ask them the same questions, and you go through the whole spiel. And so many people's shows start off with, okay, well, how did you come to this position? So you have to tell that story, and you hear that story over and over and over again. And I can understand why people would get bored with that. So, you know, at least with our show, we try to keep it interesting. We try to make it a little bit different. I actually, you know, I look to you guys here on The Fiends for a lot of inspiration, because it was listening to this show that actually gave me the inspiration to say yes to Dave originally, because I was like, hey, I listen to these guys all the time, and I love listening to it, so I could do something small like that. Why not?
Hey, outstanding. I'm glad to hear that we've been a positive influence upon you. Now, there's some other things, assuming the groups, I haven't been able to participate, but have you guys done some, maybe like a roundtable discussion might be the way to describe it? Not going off of the regular show format, but like I've seen postings put up for, you know, veterans or, you know, combat veterans to talk about what war was like and things like that. Now, have those been separate episodes?
Well, we haven't put together too many of those. We did have a second show running for a while that was dedicated to former military members that now have kind of, you know, eschewed their former life. And it just, unfortunately, we never managed to get it off the ground because conflict issues and people moving and custody issues with some of our hosts. We are trying to get that back up and running again, because that was another piece of the pie that Dave wanted to put together. He was hoping to create a small network of just different shows, you know, and again, mostly people like us relative nobodies that just really are all about, you know, freedom and liberty and just want to spread their message. So we're trying to get the Force to Freedom was the name of that show. We're trying to get that back off the ground. It's just, it's very hard to find a pairing or a threesome of ex-military or ex-police. Those are even harder unicorns for us to find. but although actually I should say we did have one on our show. That is one name. We had Rafer Davis came on our show to talk about his time in the police force. But we are trying to get that back up, and we got a lot of other ideas bouncing around. But finding people isn't always the problem. It's getting people that are willing to work together and on the same time schedule, because unfortunately we are so spread out that, you know, we're all in different time zones, and getting people on the same page is a little more difficult than we had hoped originally. So
that sounds like the fiend strategy, because I don't even think there's any, I don't think there's two fiends in the same state, but I think we do that for security purposes.
Well, of course, it makes it a lot harder.
there's always somebody in the secret undisclosed location, you know, just in case.
Well, yeah, it's a lot harder to drone the whole group that way.
Yeah, I think this is my weekend to be in the bunker. But I got a message from a gal on Facebook, and her boyfriend is a former cop, and he left under really, really horrible circumstances. From what I've gathered of his story, it just does nothing but support the whole idea that the cops are a gang and nothing more. But he had told her a while back, hey, you have to listen to these guys, the Freedom Fiends, on the radio. You know, check out their podcast. And I guess she's listened to it a couple of times. And I think he was still a cop at the time when he suggested that. So.
Wow.
Those unicorns are out there. They're few and far between.
Yeah, yeah, they are. After talking to Rayford on our show, he tried to tell us that there's a lot more than we thought, but it's hard to come across them.
And we'll be right back after this. More Freedom Fiends coming up.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
This is Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Jeremy from the Seeds of Liberty podcast. And now we're going to get into some discussions, and today's going to be rather Soviet-based. We're going to talk about some stuff from the Soviet Union, and then, of course, we'll start off.
Oh, hey, Lou. Did we lose Lou? All right. Well, Lou seems to have disappeared for the moment. Hope that wasn't a drone strike, but I think we were going to discuss some articles he had brought to me. He wanted to go Soviet style. So the first one that we had was from the
Fiend
Atlantic.
Phone. Fiend
oh,
phone.
There he is. Lou, have you returned to us? The drones didn't get you, did they? All right, well, maybe he'll pop back in. So the first one we have tonight is from the Atlantic, and the headline is Remembering the Soviet Union's Disappeared. This is in regards to the legacy of Uncle Joe Stalin and how Russia has never actually recognized what he did, and it's been covered up. So it starts off. This one, I'll just read a little bit from it. Boris Sternberg was a believer. As the Soviet Union formed, he held a series of official positions, including administrator of Moscow's reservoir. But the system in which he had placed his faith ultimately betrayed him, as it did so many communists of his era. One day, late in 1937, Joseph Stalin's secret police, the NKVD, snatched Sternberg from his Moscow apartment. He spent the next 2 months being interrogated and tortured. On December 19th, 1937, the NKVD ordered him shot. So this is a story that has been told before, usually by the family members, but the Russian government has never really wanted to acknowledge what has happened in the past. And now we have a group of people who are starting to make memorials and try to bring to light what actually happened.
Fiend phone.
Lou, are you back?
I'm back.
All right. Wow, that was one heck of a drone strike. Glad to see you survived.
Yeah, it took out one of my laptops, so I had to switch over to the other one.
Oh, okay.
So, all right, where were we before we were so rudely interrupted by the central scrutinizer?
well, you had mentioned doing a little Soviet talk, so I started to get into the Atlantic article about the remembering the disappeared from Stalin's era.
Okay, well, please continue.
Oh, well, I read a little bit from the article, and I was talking about how, you know, now there's this group of people that are trying to bring to light the atrocities. And they're making making plaques for their you know, family members or people that they knew who were disappeared, as the term goes, and they're trying to put them up in Moscow on the buildings where these people, you know, where their last known address was. And so far, the Russian government has not been taking them down, and they're allowing it to happen. But that does seem to conflict with what their message is, because Putin has kind of brought back some of Stalin's attitude, and he has a nasty habit of trumpeting the good Stalin did without wanting to mention all the horrible, horrible, horrible things that happened under his watch.
Okay, so kind of like what's happening with Trump and FDR.
Yes.
Yeah. I was expecting this to be a really long article, and for The Atlantic, it's actually rather short. They usually have some pretty long articles in there, and I was really taken by the first couple paragraphs. Boris Sternberg was a believer. As the Soviet Union formed, he held a series of official positions, including administrator of Moscow's reservoir. Moscow's reservoir, that's an actual position. Okay, keep water in here.
Hey.
All right, we'll be right back after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends Hey, this is Lou, and I am back, and hopefully I won't be disappearing again anytime soon. And I am joined by my special guest co-host and sometimes complete host, Jeremy from the Seas of Liberty podcast.
Well, at least Soviet one of us America,
still here. Yeah, in Soviet America, guest host show.
Yeah. Well,
but let's get back to this article from The Atlantic, and it's really interesting with the history of the Soviet Union, because with Bolshevik Revolution in late 1917, essentially that started the purging of dissidents and political enemies, anybody that wasn't down with the regime and part of the program and everything else. It was really a horrible thing, the way that people were just getting bumped off. And the joke about the Soviet Union was that they had to kill 60 million people just to make socialism work.
Yeah, they did a bang-up job of that.
Yeah, and what would happen is people would get taken off to places like Lefortovo prison and a few other places, and it's just unbelievable. And that's basically peak government. And there's nothing more government than prisons, except for maybe mass graves. And I find it really strange and disconcerting that somebody like a Stalin or even a Lenin would be romanticized by Putin, but he was part of the KGB and part of the apparatchik. So I really shouldn't be too darn shocked about it, even though, you know, maybe he was the warmer, fuzzier era as it was dying out.
Well, if you know, I don't know the details of the Russian so-called education system, but if it's anything like what goes on here in the USSA, you know, they're most likely indoctrinated to believe that he was a good guy. You know, that's how these type of regimes end up lasting so long, and how the memory stays alive, because the subsequent generations are have their heads filled with all the good stuff, and we're just gonna shove that bad stuff in the corner. Let's not think about that right now. Oh, that was overblown. You know, it reminds me of there's a documentary. What the heck is it? What the name of it is? But it's about Hitler. But it's from the German perspective. It's like six and a half hours long, something like that. The Greatest Story Never Told, I think that's the name of it. But it's the same type of thing where people today are still flooded with these images of, oh no, he was a good guy. And, it was the other guy's fault. It was all the evil USA and the evil, evil, you know, the evil Brits. You know, none of them were actually very good, but,
And don't forget the Jews.
You know, oh, of course.
obviously they were responsible for everything. A bad harvest, blame the Jews. But it's really interesting when you talk about the other perspective like that. And I've told the story before on the show quite a while back. I was over there in the summer of '98, and I was on a sightseeing tour, and we wound up going to this little church outside of Partenkirchen, and just a little dinky tiny place there. And they had pictures of German soldiers that were from that town that died during World War II. Now, as an American, and plus I was still hardcore status at the time, because I was over there on military duty, I'm like, what do they got these evil enemies, you know, what do they got pictures of them posted on there for? And it eventually dawned on me this, well, they didn't see their own people as the enemy. You know, they looked at it from a perspective that I could not see. And I saw a post on FaceBeast earlier today, and it goes something like this. If Russian or Chinese troops were occupying the USSA and they had drone strikes going on, and the people back in Russia or China were saying, well, yeah, I think it's horrible that those American civilians are being killed, but if it keeps our troops safe, then I'm willing to accept it. Now, if you're an American, if you're being occupied, how do you respond to that?
Well, anybody with a soul, I would assume pretty badly.
Or the desire to live.
Well, yeah, that too. but you're right, though. It's what it is. It's perspective, you know. That's actually why I sat through that entire 6.5-hour documentary, even though I knew the punchline, because it helps to be able to look at things from the other guy's perspective. I think that's why people like ourselves are able to separate from, you know, the noise that everybody else gets drowned out in, because we're you know, I don't like to speak, you know, in the royal we, but I'll speak for myself then. You know, I know myself, I like to be able to see everybody's side. Otherwise, if you just have the one, you know, if you just have the American perspective or the German perspective or the Russian perspective, the chances of you missing the bigger picture are incredibly large. And it, you know, they don't realize it. It's the same thing with the people here that will wave their flags and cheer for the troops and go rah, 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 because they don't have to see what goes on the other side. They don't have to see what they don't have to even think about what it's like to have, you know, bombs dropping on your neighborhood on a regular basis, or, you know, a drone missile coming out of nowhere and taking out, you know, a wedding or something like that. And it's much easier to close your eyes, stick your fingers in your ears, and imagine it doesn't exist, and only champion your guys. But it's funny, you mentioned that the plaques and stuff you saw, because when you think about it, it's the same thing that goes on over here, but nobody gives it a second thought. You know, they rename highways for supposed heroes, and, you know, streets. You know, they put plaques on buildings. And I can imagine that somebody coming from, say, somewhere in the Middle East or even Germany or anywhere comes over here and sees those blacks, they may see them very differently than an American would.
Yeah. And some of this is very interesting. The paragraph that you read while I was gone and I started reading before the commercial, the second paragraph was, Sternberg's execution cast a long shadow on his family. His wife spent 5 years in a labor camp and was allowed to return to Moscow only after Stalin's death. So the family members were punished, and it was really amazing. Is most people would say, oh my God, you know, that evil regime, they killed him. And it doesn't really say what he was killed for, but not only did they kill him, but they punished his wife. And these same people that would say, oh my God, this collective punishment, well, they wouldn't use that word, but those that would say punishing the family members, you know, because the father and husband angered the regime, you know, that's completely unreasonable. But these are the same people that say, well, you know what, if those civilians are in that drone strike, well, they should have picked someplace else to be born.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I hate to admit that I used to be one of those people. I guess I understand that mindset, but yeah, you're right. They are the same people that would say that. But then again, if it wasn't for the acceptance of blatant contradictions, most statists wouldn't be statists anymore. It's kind of you have to have that in you in order to be able to turn a blind eye to a lot of this stuff.
Since we're doing statist confession here, I may have coined some of the phrases that the Bush regime used to justify the war in Iraq, because I'm pretty sure I came up with the smoking gun might come in the form of a mushroom cloud before any of them did it. And when I heard one of them say it, I was like, yes, yes, yes. And now when I think back on it, I'm like, no, no, no. That means I was thinking back then. It was like, yay, they're thinking like me. And now it's like, no, I was thinking like them. It's horrible. Now, something else that happened when people were disappeared, the family was quite often ostracized, and it wasn't just a matter of, you know, the government telling people, well, these are bad people, you know, you should ostracize them, and it wasn't, you know, trying to make the government think that they were ostracizing them. These people had such Stockholm syndrome that when somebody was taken away as a dissident, that these people took it as an attack upon themselves and not just on the government.
Yeah, well, that's how these type of regimes stay in power because people actually believe that they're there for everybody else's best interest. And how dare you? And how dare you speak against the king? Type of thing. You know, it's the, you know, you're right. Stockholm syndrome. That's the 1984 scenario where the proles just stay in line and most of them don't want to question anything. And how dare you speak up against the people that give us our food?
And when the banner drops, that's when they change and form their opinions.
Yep.
I was having a discussion earlier today with some people at work, and they were talking about George Takei, and I had seen a documentary or maybe an article or something like that, and he was talking about his time in the concentration camp during World War II, that camp counselor of the year for 1943, 1944, and 1945, Red DR had put him into. And he said that it made him appreciate freedom more, and he did not hold any resentment for it. And that, to me, is just a horrible case of Stockholm syndrome, to actually begin to identify and love your captors. Because the internment of the Japanese Americans, that wasn't about safety. That was out of fear. Nothing but plain fear. It wasn't rational thought. It wasn't deliberate. It was just, we're scared. Oh my God, we better do something. Lock people up and put them in concentration camps. Now, granted, they were called internment camps, but, you know, hey, what did Red DR and Adolf Hitler have in common? They both had American prisoners of war in concentration camps.
Yeah.
Now, by the same token, I saw something just before we went on air earlier tonight, and it was George Takei. Again, and he's talking about I think a Broadway musical or some sort of stage performance, and it's reenactments of time in the concentration camp. And now he's talking about how repressive it was because the Donald Trump has been talking about the internment camps of the Japanese. So when the shoe's on the other foot, old George goes the other way. We'll be back, more Freedom Fiends after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Oh, yeah. Freedom Fiends. Final segment for the first hour. A little redemption in the third act. Venezuela has recently had elections, and I'm not sure if I would call this a step in the right direction or a stumble, I don't know, to the left or right. But anyway, I don't think it's ultimately a step in the right direction. I think it's a stumble, you know, like in the right direction, sort of, kind of. Anyway, Venezuela's opposition has won control of the National Assembly by a landslide, trouncing the ruling party and altering the balance of power after almost 17 years of socialist rule. The opposition coalition won at least 99 seats in the incoming 167-seat legislature. Electoral authorities announced after midnight Sunday. The ruling Socialist Party won 46 seats. My God, those people that voted for them are idiots. I don't have a whole lot of love and respect for voters, but anyway, the 19 remaining races remain up for grabs, but if enough are won by the opposition, it could give the coalition a two-thirds supermajority needed to strongly challenge Nicolas Maduro's grip on power. So it looks like that, at the very least, the hardcore socialists have lost their majority, and it could be that the opposition has a supermajority. How do you see this working out?
Well, if history tells us anything, not very well. well, because, I mean, hasn't... I mean, the whole thing with, you know, Maduro, it's the well, he was the tail end of the 17 years of supposed socialist rule, but hasn't this been, like, a back and forth for generations with them, where they get a little bit of freedom, and then they decide, oh no, that's not good, and then, you know, somebody like Chavez sweeps in, and takes it completely socialist again, and then the people grow tired of it, and they have riots in the streets, and everybody gets upset, and then they go through the electoral process, and in this situation where it's a supposed win, all these people cheer because they think things are going to be great now, but what is it really changing? It's not changing the system per se. It's just changing out the parts. That's the problem, because, you know, what are they going to replace it with? Socialism light? You know, I don't see the free market flourishing just because Maduro has supposedly lost some of his power. Because I, you know, reading through that article, it says even if those other seats do go and they have this so-called supermajority, Maduro still has control of their Supreme Court. he still has control of most of the apparatchik. So what is that going to do? That's like, you know, it's like here where all the Republicans and neocons and Tea Partiers got excited when, you know, the Republicans, oh, they took the House, and oh, they're going to take the Senate. But, oh, Obama's still in charge, so he's just going to veto everything. It's like, okay, great. Now you're just going to have more log jams.
Yeah. And Obamacare is still the law of the land. But truth be told, I'm pretty sure the GOP plans on campaigning on repealing Obamacare for the next 50 to 75 years.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Now, in the article, it mentioned that the opposition folks were looking to loosen the economic restrictions and make it a little bit more free-ish market. So what it really sounds like to me is they're just going to lower the degree of socialism. They're not going to get rid of socialism. It's not going to be a completely free market. They're not going to get rid of their central bank. As a matter of fact, I think they were talking about reforming the central bank there. But they're not going to go with sound money and a proper fiscal or monetary policy. They're probably going to maintain their welfare state. I don't know how big their military is and how much of the tax that gobbles up, but bottom line, it's just going to be a slight reduction.
Yeah,
as near as I can tell.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes. Well, one of the fiends is from Venezuela, isn't he? Isn't Hugo from? Wasn't that where he's from originally?
Yeah, and now he lives in Mexico City. And I believe I don't know if there's a picture of him shaking hands with Hugo Chavez as a youngster, but he had talked about doing that. So, yeah. We will call that a youthful indiscretion. But anyway, we'll be back. More Freedom Fiends, second hour, after this trip to the market, news break, and the coffee pot.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Jeremy from the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Welcome back, Jeremy. Second hour.
Still here, Lou. Haven't got drone yet.
I wish I could say the same. So, next up, there's an article that recently came out in dinbits.com, and the title is very misleading. It says, Bitcoin sales now prohibited in the state of New Hampshire. And when I first saw it, I wasn't completely shocked by it because that's something that we would expect to see because, you know, hey, government has to control all commerce and regulate it and bring it to a grinding, screeching halt. And, you know, because that's how Sovietization works. But it turns out that it's not completely banned. It'd be interesting if it was completely banned because folks up in New Hampshire, particularly the Free Staters, who would probably be the biggest users of Bitcoin, have a very strong streak of noncompliance in them. And, you know, when I first saw the article, I was like, yeah, go ahead, ban it. You know, I'm sure it'll wind up like cannabis where it's everywhere. But anyway, what really happened was unlicensed Bitcoin sales are now prohibited in New Hampshire. And what that means is if you are going to sell Bitcoins, you have to be a registered vendor. So you have to have a license for financial transactions through the state of New Hampshire. And that will kick in January 1st of 2016. It will be illegal to sell Bitcoin without a traditional money transmitter's license.
Yeah, they picked up the model of my, unfortunately, my home state, New York.
New York State of Stan, the Empire State.
Well, yes, it is very fitting, although I affectionately refer to it as the Democratic People's Republic of New Yorkistan. But yes, they apparently they are, New Hampshire is kind of following the New York lead. There appears to be this, I guess, divide on how to handle Bitcoin. Some of the states are not caring at the moment. Other ones, I think Texas is the one they mentioned in the article, has kind of got a different route with it. But it seems that any of the new regulations that are coming out in the different states are following one of the two patterns. And New Hampshire apparently is following more of the New York pattern. I try to ignore stuff like this just because, you know, non-compliance does give me the warm fuzzies. So I try not to pay attention. I also don't dabble too much in Bitcoin. I mean, I have some, but I'm not a rich man by any standards. So I can only afford to pick up a little here and there. And I actually haven't tried to purchase any since they started changing the laws around here. But you know, like you said, the article, the title was misleading. I saw a lot of people on social media got tricked by this right away, obviously not reading the article, because as of now, there's actually an editor's note at the beginning saying, hey, we wanted to change the title, but for some reason we can't. I don't really understand that. But yeah, it's not banned. But the way they wrote the legislation out, it actually... It, according to the article, at least in the legislation, it basically has it set up that nobody can sell and bitcoins to any, you know, you can't do it with anybody within the state. So no matter where you are, you'll end up having to have a license if you want people to live within the borders of New Hampshire. So it effectively takes care of everybody around the world.
And remember, you're not free unless you have your licenses and permits that prove that you're free.
Well, exactly.
it looks like your home empire, your home tax farm, created a brand new digital or virtual currency license, aka a bit license, mm-hmm. to try and stop the wheels of commerce from going.
Yes, that was their plan. I haven't bothered to register for mine yet, unfortunately. Maybe I'll get to that next week. I don't know.
Well, that's only if you are a seller, a broker of Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, for now. But that's, you know, just like everything else, they're just getting their foot in the door, to try to make sure that they have things in place for later, so they can, you know, when they need to, they can ratchet it up a little bit and tweak the bills. You know, that goes back to the Venezuela article we were talking about before. You know, it's all about reform. They always want to keep reforming things. They want to keep changing things. They don't want to admit that having to reform things over and over and over again means they failed miserably the first 50 times. But yeah, it's anything to stop commerce, because Bitcoin scares the bejesus out of the banking system, I think. Although you find out, I've read a number of articles over the past couple of months, you know, how many bankers are now dabbling in Bitcoin. And when the people who are supposed to be in charge of the so-called money are getting involved, that usually means that they're behind the curve, obviously, but they're figuring out that, hey, we need to get in on this too. So if they want it, why, you know, I don't understand why other people are still shying away from it. Because it's the whole idea of blockchain and Bitcoin technology and all that stuff, it's something that people have said it could bring the state to its knees. Well, as long as people don't let the regulations get in the way, sure, it could, because you can transact from anywhere. You know, you don't have to. There's a record of you doing it, but it's supposed to be somewhat anonymous, and that's why these states are clamping down, because they don't. You know, if you're able to buy, sell, and trade stuff without their knowledge, then you're not paying into their system, and we can't have that, because you know. So it's un-American to not want to pay your taxes, you know.
Yep. And speaking of which, the Congress and the president have been busy lately. And this article comes to us from Forbes. IRS power to revoke passports signed into law. And this is really interesting. The passport provision is now official. As President Obama signed the 5-year infrastructure spending bill, it adds a new section 7345 to the Internal Revenue Code. It is part of H.R. 22, Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, AKA the FAST Act. You know, I think we could bring government to a screeching halt if we found the acronym office. But anyway, why are passports covered in the tax code, you might ask? The title of the new section is Revocation or Denial of Passport in Case of Certain Tax Delinquencies. This idea goes back to 2012 when the Government Accountability Office, more Orwellian stuff, reported on the potential for using the issuance of passports to collect taxes. So if you don't like the tax system, you can leave. Oh, wait a minute. No, you can't. So I guess there's going to be a bunch of people that can't go to Somalia now. But anyway, it was a controversial idea way back when, and this time it basically sailed through without a whole lot of debate. As a matter of fact, I think it took less than 30 minutes for be introduced and for it to be passed through the Congress. So, but here's what's really interesting. The section on passports begins on page 1,113. I wonder how many people read the entire bill. How many the Congress critters, the deceivers?
Most likely zero. I think the only people that actually read all the bills are those individuals out there that try to be watchdogs, who want to try to fix the political system. But none of the people ever read the bills. I mean, heck, they don't even write the bills. Their staff usually writes them, and they just nod their head and go, okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Now, this is for people that are delinquent in amounts exceeding $50,000, so probably not too many of the common folks out there are going to be affected by that. But here's something that's really interesting. Considering that there are some states that because they're not compliant with the Real ID Act or whatever it's called, travel between U.S. states is going to be restricted because it will require a passport to go from, like, let's say, Nebraska to New York State. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I think New York State is one of the states that's not compliant.
Yes, and normally where I'd want to, you know, give a little cheer for that because, hey, non-compliance, great. But yeah, it's going to affect me greatly because I'm going to need a passport to get the heck out of here if I ever finally get around to moving off along, you know, moving off of Long Island. But that's the problem. People say, oh, it's only for these horrible tax cheats. Well, the $50,000 number seems like a lot for most people, but if you read even further through the article, it talks about it's not just $50,000 in a tax debt. It also includes any penalties and anything else that they've decided to tack on to you. All of that counts too. So they are. I mean, you mentioned the, you know, not going to be able to move the Somalia thing. I actually made a meme about that yesterday about the, you know, how that's a famous line. People say, well, if you don't like it, you're free to leave. Well, really? What were you saying about that? Because, I mean, even before this, there's the fact that you're supposed to have to renounce your citizenship and pay a fee just to get out. But this makes it even worse because, again, most people on its face would say, oh, it's just for the big people and it doesn't matter. But like you said, they're going to start restricting people within the states if you don't have a passport. And that's just taking Soviet style stuff to a whole new level.
Yeah. It's really gonna. Well, the Soviet Union did have internal passports. So to go from one city to another city, and particularly there were closed cities where you had to have government permission to actually live and work there. You know, cities like Moscow, I believe St. Petersburg was one. What's the capital in Ukraine?
I can't think of it
off the top of my head. But yeah, I'm usually pretty good about those things. But yeah, they're closed cities. You had to have permission to live there. And well, welcome to the USSA. And we'll be back right after this.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch, now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
I'm joined by special guest Jeremy of the Seeds of Liberty podcast, and we are talking about the Fugitive Slave Act 2015, also known as the IRS deciding that they can take away people's passports and deny them the right to travel. In the article here, down towards the bottom, it says, the right to travel has been recognized as fundamental, both between states and internationally, and although some restrictions have been upheld, it is not clear that this measure will pass the constitutional test if it is challenged. Now, keep in mind that the constitutional test is you have to get five of the so-called most learned constitutional scholars in the country to agree to it. So, five of nine. And if the Constitution was actually clearly written, and if there was such a thing as a rule of law instead of the rule of men and opinions backed up by the barrel of a gun, everything would be 9-0. Everything. By the way, speaking of challenge, it is not off topic to mention FATCA, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. FATCA penalizes foreign banks that don't hand over American account holders. There are approximately 8 million Americans living overseas, many of whom are still reeling from FATCA compliance problems. And also there's another one called FACTA, F-A-C-T-A, where this is F-A-T-C-A. And it's funny, I was doing a show one night, I was trying to remember if it was FACTA or FATCA, and you have both. You know, something else that's really interesting is the USSA is one of two countries in the world that has the international income. It used to be, and it is in every other country except for two, one of which being some banana republic in Africa, that if you lived outside of your home country, you know, if you got off the tax farm and went to a different farm, you didn't have to pay income tax on your earnings because you weren't there. But the USSA requires you to pay income tax on top of whatever you pay in the tax farm that you're residing in. And people that have dual citizenship, there's actually been stories about people that were born in Canada. One parent was an American, but they were born in Canada. They never set foot in the USSA ever. And years later, they get letters from the IRS saying that they owe money because they're U.S. citizens living abroad.
Yeah, that's it's one of the ways they love to get you, which also goes to that, also throws that whole, you know, you're free to leave theory in the garbage. Because most people don't think about these things, but yeah, they want their money, so they're gonna try to get it from you no matter what. And the whole, you know, if it passes the constitutional test, that just makes me chuckle every time. Because, you know, even beyond what you said about the Supreme Court, I mean, so many people just they look at that document and go, oh well, that's gonna keep us safe. Well, no, because who interprets that thing? Who's always interpreted that thing? The people in charge. So they can pretty much do whatever they want. But they're gonna, you know, this is just another way to keep people in line, to keep people paying into the system.
Well, you don't think that the president and the Senate that confirms the Supreme Court is going to appoint and confirm a bunch of anti-government people, do you? No.
Well, no, of course not.
No. Let's go back to the original Constitution. No person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall in consequence of any law or regulation therein be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. That's the original Fugitive Slave Laws. That's Article 4, Section 2. And that sounds eerily descriptive of this new, well, we're going to take your passport nonsense. And then also the international taxation and everything else. And then with the 13th Amendment, everybody thinks that the 13th Amendment abolished slavery. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Notice the part about shall have been duly convicted.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. you got to go to the government court for not paying your taxes, and then, well, you know, here you go. Slavery still exists.
Yeah, of course. Well, and so many people hate when you make that analogy, but it's true. It's, you know, I mean, I heard it the first time. I think it was from Ben Stone, actually. The whole, you know, people get, you know, so many people get mad if you refer to being held into a system with taxation like this as being a slave, and people get offended by that. But they have no problem pointing to the story of the Jews in Egypt and going, well, they were slaves. Yeah, well, they were tax slaves. Why is it okay to refer to them as slaves and not ourselves?
More Freedom Fiends coming up.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Beans. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Jeremy from the Seeds of Liberty podcast. And we've been talking about the Soviet Union and the USSA tonight. Yeah, covered a lot of ground on that. And we got some more Sovietization here. It's more of the war on commerce. But this is an article that you kind of like because it has the disobedience portion of it. The outlaw Uber grandma.
Yes, this one. So, this one made me laugh.
Yeah, and smile. Well, tell us about it. Tell us about it.
All right. Well, I'll just read from the beginning of it. But the article starts: outlaw Uber grandma Stephanie Franz rejected a plea deal that would have reduced fines for her unregistered Uber driving from $3,500 to $700, instead pleading not guilty and planning to fight the citations at trial. Well, right off the bat, I love this woman because most people get into situations like this, and if a plea deal is presented to them, they'll say, okay, I'll take it, because they don't want to be penalized anymore. But that's how the so-called justice system works here. Most of the times, they're hoping people will take plea deals because they just want to collect their money somehow, some way, and they want to be able to punish the so-called guilty parties. So they're quite happy if you take plea deals. I mean, we deal with that here in New York, especially in the traffic sector, where they give you these, you know, ridiculous fines for some of the silliest infractions. And, you know, especially in the county where I live, their whole goal is to get you in there with as many as possible. So you'll just say yes when they say, oh, we'll cut you a break and we'll cut this down. You know, to me, it's like a used car salesman who jacks the price up $5,000 and then cuts you a break by saying, hey, I'll knock a couple grand off this to make you think you're getting a deal. But with this situation with Uber, you know, Uber is, not allowed where she lives. Where is this? I forget. Was it Oregon or?
Delaware, maybe something like that, or Connecticut, yeah. Portsmouth.
Yeah, I was trying to read that, but yeah. So the whole thing is she was fined for not being a registered, not registering with the state, and she got caught a couple of times, and she decided to just say no, that she's not, that she wants to go to trial. Now, I'm not a big fan of telling people to go to trial, because, you know, again, it's not a justice system, it's a legal system. There's no justice involved. So going there can, I don't know, sometimes in my eyes, legitimize the system almost. But the idea, the idea she's presenting, I think, is a good one. It's saying, no, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm providing a service for people. People want that service. Why should I have to pay for a registration, and why should you have to be able to track my, my whereabouts just so I can help people out? You know, that's the whole problem with Uber. I mean, everybody, well, not the problem with Uber, the problem people have with Uber, rather, all the taxi drivers are up in arms because they're stealing jobs from them. And, there's just people out there. Yeah, well, exactly. But like I said,
I like my Uber drivers like I like my guns and immigrants, unregistered with the government.
There you go.
Throw in income too.
But I think her taking a stand, I think is great. I wish more people would do this, because they tried to backdoor her in. They said, okay, yeah, we'll cut the fines, and yes, they were willing to drop from $3,500 to $700, but they also said, by doing so, you're pleading guilty, which means you now have to register. You still have to register, and you still have to get their little permission slip to say, okay, you're now allowed to do this. And she's saying no. She's saying no, I want my day in court. Now, will she lose? Of course, it's always a possibility. But like I said, noncompliance gives me the warm fuzzies. So I love seeing stories like this. I wish more people would stand up and not just take what the government gives them, or accept their punishment. I mean, if you fight and they're still going to punish you, then yeah, I mean, you may have to take it, but at least make a stand. Because the one thing, whether you are a hardcore constitutionalist or even a minarchist or anybody who believes that government is necessary in some capacity, even the ones that think that a lot of the laws are ridiculous, they all want to fight.
Obey.
Well, yeah, but some of them will say, oh, we can fight through the system to get them repealed. Well, that's silly. What's the quickest way to end any so-called law is to make it unenforceable. It's not to go through Congress. It's not to write your representatives. It's not to start petitions. You literally make it unenforceable. And how do you do that? You just get people to start standing up and saying no. And that's why I champion Grandma Franz here. I think she's a hero in this regard. And I really wish more people would take her lead.
Yeah, her biggest crime here is being disobedient to government. And a lot of these people that are anti-government, well, maybe not really anti-government, but they hate the politicians. But they still expect you to obey the government when the government is these politicians that they hate. And quite frankly, if you can't say no to government, then you're not free. If you can't say no over something minor and piddly like this, you're not free. You're not sort of free. You're not even kind of free. And there's no such thing as half free.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a part in here that I got a kick out of. France said that she received no citations last weekend when one patrol officer waved at her and another let her park in a taxi stand while she ran into the I Like That store on Market Street to buy a... get this, Free Grandma Rally t-shirt. The rally organized by other Uber drivers is scheduled to precede the December 7th city council meeting. So, yeah, hopefully they're going to be wearing these t-shirts and not marching around waving the flag of their oppressors. But, I wonder how many other Uber drivers are getting hassled. I wonder if it's just her.
As far as I could tell from the article, there isn't that many in that area. They had, you know, people, Uber had just kind of come there, and they haven't. She was one of the only ones that was doing it currently. Although the picture from the article has somebody else sitting next to her who's also an Uber driver, but Uber itself is taking up her case and is trying to help her out, which is great. You know, it's just so unfortunate because people see this as a threat. You know, and all it is, it literally all it is people trying to make a buck while helping other people. And for anybody to think there's something wrong with that, they really need to check their perspective, because what's wrong with trying to help people? You know, I mean, where was it that they had that they actually tried to put a regulation in that Uber drivers had to wait 5 minutes or something like that I read about a couple of weeks ago?
Because they're too efficient.
Yeah, they're too efficient, and the taxi drivers the taxi drivers' feelings were hurt. Wherever it was, the city council tried to come up with a regulation that said, like, basically giving the taxi drivers a head start.
So kind of like Harrison Bergeron, they couldn't make the weak stronger, so they had to make the strong weaker. Some of the comments on the article, one fellow says, yes, she gives my roommates and I rides frequently. Friendly, courteous, and affordable. Good luck in court and keep it up. Another person is, and if it wasn't for Uber, then there would have been absolutely no way to get a ride at all. Derp, derp. Good comment. And, of course, there's a response to that guy. It says, I'm not against Uber. I'm for safety and protection of our residents and guests. If you want... Oh, my God, does this guy speak English? If you want to transport passengers for income, then you should abide by the law. The law states you must have a commercial limited liability insurance that satisfies the city attorney. You must also provide the police department with a driving and criminal background reports. If approved, feel free to make yourself available to the public. So, as our friend from Free Talk Live, Mark Edge, would put it, government licensing is when your right to do something is taken away and then sold back to you. And for this person, John Warren, I can't pronounce the last name, it's some kind of Italian name. But it's not about protection of the consumer. It's about protectionism of the taxis. So, sorry, brother. You know, grow up. Get a clue.
Well, yeah, it's the protectionism, and it's also revenue generation, because, you know, they charge people for these registrations and these permission slips, and they make money off of that. There was another article I came across about Uber recently. It's, you know, it's the same thing. People are just they're complaining about the safety. Oh, well, they're not following the law. And there was a police officer quoted in there saying that, oh, we don't feel that Uber's background checks are up to snuff. And they had one example to point where one Uber driver in one location beat up their fare. That was it. That was their anecdotal evidence to see these background checks are not good enough, as if taxi drivers never do bad things. If you know, it's just ridiculous, because if you want to feel safe and you need government regulations for that, great. But what about the rest of us that are willing to be a little more free? The rest of us that are willing to say, hey, I'm okay with Uber's background check policy. Hey, I'm okay with their insurance that they cover, you know, the $1 million policy or whatever it is that they cover all their drivers with. I'm okay with that. I'm being responsible for my own actions and saying, I want to do this. Why should I not be allowed to, you know? And that, unfortunately, is the fundamental question with most things that the government likes to ban, or the citizenry likes to clamor to have banned. It's like, okay, you don't like it. It doesn't make you happy. Don't use it. You know, like...
Here's a thought for you. Whenever you see, like, a car accident on the roads or the highways or even the side streets, how many of those accidents do you think were involved a driver who received a driver's license from the state?
Yeah.
Or even have their vehicle inspected by the state, too. Mm-hmm. It's all a scam. I mean, a government license doesn't guarantee a safer, better product. So we'll be right back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption by Jeremy of the Seeds of Liberty podcast. And our last couple stories for the night are from the Feeble Minds Think Alike category. And old Donald Trump, he's kind of stepping it with his Sovietization of America. He's going to make sure that we have internal passports and enclosed cities and everything else. And he's also talking about the internet. You know, the modern day library, the place where people go for information, even if it's counter to the prevailing thoughts. So I wonder if he's going to call for imprisoning dissidents that go on like prohibited websites and have prohibited propaganda, you know, kind of like these Germans and the Soviets did. But John Kerry was complaining a couple of years ago. He says that the internet is making it difficult to govern, meaning to control. Mm-hmm. A while back, Hillary said, "We have to deny them online space," she said. Clinton acknowledged that this is complicated. "We're going to hear all the usual complaints, freedom of speech, etc., etc." Yeah. Do you have his quote on the internet?
Oh, Donald's? Yes. Mr. Trump's wonderful quote. Let's see. "We're losing a lot of people because of the internet. We have to see Bill Gates and a lot of different people that really understand what's happening. We have to talk to them about, maybe in certain areas, closing that internet up in some ways." Somebody will say, "Oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people." Oh, my dear goodness.
Wow.
I don't even know where to go with that.
is he like quoting Hillary?
Apparently, the foolish people, yes. How dare people want to speak their mind? Unfortunately, so many people get hung up on the freedom of speech thing because they don't understand what it actually means. A lot of people think that, "Oh, I have freedom of speech. I can say whatever I want, wherever I want." Well, no, that's not true. You can't walk into my living room and start calling me names because I'll probably throw you out the door. But in general, that, you know, shutting down the internet, you know, my favorite part about this is we're losing a lot of people because of the internet. Exactly. That's the point, Donald. People are starting to realize that people like yourself do not have everybody else's best interest at heart. And they're saying, "Hey, wait a minute, maybe there's a better way."
Yeah. Now, what he's referring to is people that are converting to ISIS, and they're watching, they're going to these ISIS websites, which, oh my God, how is NSA and everybody not taking these websites down? You know, how does ISIS have a Twitter feed? So anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that, yeah, that's what he claims it's about. But this is another one of these, you know, this is political speak. It's these vague terms that can later be used to justify other actions.
What do you think is possible that people could become radicalized because they see reports about ISIS on CNN?
No, that couldn't happen. No. Not from the media. Not at all. No, of course not. It's only from the dangerous people on the internet. You know, those alternative people. Only those type of people could radicalize anybody.
Do you think it could be possible that Americans become radical and anti-government because of watching not just CNN, but maybe C-SPAN? Well, you know, well, taking a look at the sausage factory and seeing how the sausage is made.
Oh gosh, I give anybody credit who can sit through C-SPAN. I've tried to do that before. It's mind-numbing.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is everybody's all these politicians are complaining about the anti-government sentiment out there, and they never ever bother to think, where is it coming from? Why do they hate us? They must hate us for our freedom.
No, absolutely.
We hate you because you steal freedom.
So true, Lou. So true.
So, to leave on a good note, walk away. Quit playing the shell game or whack-a-mole of trying to get the right ruler that will leave you alone and abuse other people. Because when you open other people up to abuse, you open yourself up to abuse. Be your own leader.
Absolutely. Vacate the state is a motto I live by, and I encourage others to adopt it as well.
You don't need a leash, even if it's longer than the one you have right now. Well, thanks for coming on, Jeremy, and everybody can check out his website,